Adams, and you're listening to Carrie's Connoisseurs, coming to you from Solid Gold Podcasts. Here we talk to the movers and shakers, the drinkers, the dreamers, and all the people who make it happen in the liquor and luxury industries from around the world. Well, hello everybody, and welcome to Carrie's Connoisseurs. It's the 7th of... what is it? The 7th of May, Cal. It's the 7th of May, and I finally got hold of one of my favorite boyfriends, Jeff Greer. Jeff, welcome to my studio. Hi.
Thanks, Carrie. Great to be with you.
And you. Should we tell everybody what's gone on behind the scenes for the last half an hour? Jeff and Callum and I have been trying to navigate this studio, and between Jeff and I, who are Technosaurus Rex, and Callum, my poor sound engineer. Anyway, here we are. We finally got this done. We're on Riverside. Jeff's got Kathy, his sister's, earphones in. I think Kathy's laptop as well. But we're here, and we're up, and we're running, and we are talking to Jeff, who is... does he need any introduction? No, not really. Jeff is one of our top... am I allowed to say top MCC producer? Peter Ferreira will never speak to me again if I say that. But Jeff Greer, the Valera family, the Valera farm, the Valera brand, unbelievable. I think it was this time last year I interviewed you, Jeff, and we had this whole long interview, this whole long podcast, and you had a huge secret under your hat that you weren't allowed to say a word about. And I think it was literally 2 days or the day after our podcast that you divulged to the world that you'd actually sold your farm. When was that?
That is correct. It's almost exactly a year ago because... I've got a contract with our new owners, and I'm very aware of how long it's been. And yeah, it was in April last year, and I was sworn to confidentiality, so I apologize to you and your listeners. But I'm very pleased that you accepted it with an open heart like you always do.
Well, you sold a very, very successful sale that I think went through to GCF. What do they stand for? Something much fancier than that. Le Grand Chez de France or something like that. But it's an enormous company in France, isn't it?
Yes, Le Grand Chez de France. They are massive producers of wine, not only in France. France is obviously their home and their main source of wine. But they operate in a couple of countries in the old world, but also in the new world, and not only South Africa.
And now I'm going to dig a bit, because everybody, you Greers are so, you're such a classy bunch. You just keep quiet. You sail under or over the radar, but never through it. So nobody really knew how, why. Were you looking to sell? Did you actively look for a buyer, or did they approach you?
No, we weren't looking to sell. We'd been planning succession for years. But when it was coming towards the later years, you know, we got consultants in to assist us with the process. And one of our consultants suggested that we shouldn't ignore the option of a sale. And it was only then that we even considered that it might be a possibility. But yeah, at that time... We were approached.
Well, it's everybody's dream.
So we were approached, and we decided to consider it, and you know, a few months down the line, an offer was made, and we agreed. We just felt it was the right company to take Valera to a new level.
Well, I think it is, definitely. I mean, first of all, one thing we love about them most is that they're based in Alsace, which is, I know, one of your favorites and definitely one of my favorite wine-producing regions of the world. I could pack my bags and go and live in Alsace tomorrow. It's a gorgeous place. They've asked you to stay on for a bit, though, not surprisingly. How long are you still at Valera for?
So the Greers got 3-year contracts to ensure that we have a smooth transition, and you know, for everyone here to have that sense of security that things aren't going to change too fast, and that that you know, we'll be around to ensure that things go smoothly. And yeah, it's been working for us.
Well, I'm pleased to hear it, because Valera is sort of one of the building blocks, one of the foundations of the South African wine industry. And it certainly makes people like me feel safe and secure. All the time there's a Valera and a Kanonkop and a Thelema and, you know, all my gorgeous old boys that have made my job safe and sound for so long. It sort of feels comfy while you're all there. And then when I heard that Valera had been sold, and Neertlingshof, I mean, it's just been there forever. I think I met old Hans Schreiber once. I mean, and then when that starts getting sold, you start feeling a little bit of a trickle of insecurity run through my veins, you know, and I think, oh my God, the industry's changing. We don't like change. We're scared of it. I think it's a good change, though, don't you?
I do, and you know, change is always going to happen. And quite honestly, if companies like GCF feel that South Africa is a solid place to invest, and that the potential for the future is great, then I think that's a great thing, because you know, a lot of South Africans get negative, and there's no need, because these guys overlook things that we moan about, like load shedding, etc. And they just feel that the quality is there.
They overlook it because they don't have to live with it.
Well, they don't have to live with it, but they also see the benefits, you know, the work ethic, the quality, the level of knowledge and commitment to the future of wine. And yes, of course, I think the euro goes a long way in South Africa when they're investing in a place where the currency is a bit weaker, so that's a benefit. Mm. But yeah, essentially, I think it's more about also for them spreading their risk on climate change and that type of thing, you know, because climate change is a big issue for farmers, and particularly wine farmers. I mean, you've seen what it's done to some areas in the international wine industry. And to have vineyard in different parts of the world spreads your risk.
Yeah. No, it's all good. And, of course, Dier Valtheyns has been appointed as cellar master. Is he the cellar master for all three brands, for Neertlingshof, Valera, and Hill & Dale, or is he just at Valera?
No, he's actually general manager. So, basically, he looks after, you know, all the sort of managerial things. But he is a winemaker, and he loves wine. He's passionate about wine, so he pays a lot of attention to the wine side of things. But while I'm here, he probably has more influence at Neertlingshof than at Valera.
Well, who would dare to even try and make wine in the presence of Jeff Greer in the cellar? I wouldn't, that's for sure. You can only make a bugger up compared to what you're doing. So then I will interview Dierwald at a different stage, and so we won't sort of belabor that. But what I really, really phoned you about is that I think it was 2 weeks ago, I was invited to a very special lunch at the Westcliff Four Seasons Hotel with all my Valerians, and it was to celebrate the launch of a lovely new bubbly, because you are bubbly. I mean, you make everything else as well, but bubbly is your thing. And Valera's launched a new label called Valera Pithos. Or is it Pithos? I don't know. It's obviously a Greek word, and you can tell them all about it. But it was really to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the 40th vintage of MCC coming out of Valera. Tell us all about that, Jeff.
Yeah, Carrie, it was a special function for me. I was up in Joburg to launch the Pithos, we call it. And I also felt like it was more than a launch. There was a lot of my good friends and connections in the wine industry there.
It
and,
was gorgeous. It was gorgeous.
It felt like a family lunch, you know.
Yeah.
And the Pithos is something very special to me because in 2016 we were thinking that, you know, in 8 years' time we're going to be busy producing our 40th vintage of Cup Classique. And we thought, you know, we better think about something that that can celebrate that milestone. And I mean, we started thinking about it before the 2016 vintage. But in 2016, we decided to make a super premium Cup Classique, which obviously needed time to reach perfection. And so the big thing about a super premium wine is that it has to be excellent on all levels. It had to be great quality. So, you know, we basically used our best fruit, and it had to be you know, something unique and innovative. So we decided to create an amphora, a big one, which is we basically looked up what a big amphora is called, and it's called a pithos, so that's where the name comes from. But we decided that we were going to basically use the clay from our property to make this thing. And there's a guy in Hout Bay or in Noordhoek who creates these amphora, and he produced this thing for us using clay from Valera. And in 2016 we fermented.
Did he make a big mold and mold the clay around a frame, or how did he make it?
No, I think he just puts the clay, you know, I never actually saw the process because this is a monstrous thing and you can't like hand mold the thing. I don't think he made a mold, to be honest.
I wonder how he made it.
I'm not sure how he did it.
We'll have to find him. Yeah. You'll have to give me his name and details.
His name's Yogi.
I'm going to seek him out. And I'm going to ask him how he made that thing. It's quite ingenious, really.
Yeah.
So he made the thing, and then you had to get it from Hout Bay to Valera.
Yeah, look, that wasn't a problem. It's not that heavy, but it's breakable, and we've already broken the lid on it. Because, you know, we've used it every year since 2016. So there's plenty of usage. So what we did was we got what we call the tête de cuvée, which is the head of the cuvée. So normally for Cup Classique, you use the cuvée, which is the best quality juice. And the head of the cuvée is even better. But it's a small portion. And we took that to the amphora for primary fermentation and then maturation on the lees in the amphora. And after about six months,
you left it in the pithos for how long? For 7 years?
No, for 6 months. And then we bottled the wine to go through fermentation in the bottle.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm. But we selected a bottle that that looks a bit like an amphora. So it's a beautifully rounded bottle, which is a bit more unique. And then, you know, we spent a lot of time on the packaging because we felt that we had to communicate how good the wine was.
And did you bring a bottle with you so that we can show everybody on this podcast what this bottle looks like?
I'm very unprepared. I have been moving around due to our technical problems. So I'm in the third room. So I'm not in the same room I started in.
You become terribly unprepared. I will get Shannon or one of the children to put a picture of this bottle somewhere on this podcast so that we can show everyone, because it is absolutely spectacular. It's very beautifully packaged. I'll do the picture bit.
And it, It was quite an experience going through the whole packaging process, because we paid attention to every item of the packaging, you know, the bottle, the muesli, yes, the foil, the label, the box that the bottle goes into. And, you know, everything had to be right.
Well, it's so beautiful that you don't even want to open it. You know, I just feel like I don't want to damage the box. I don't want to take the cork out of the bottle. I just want to keep it like that. It's just so pretty. It's really, really, I'll go so far as to say that I think it honestly has to be our premium MCC from South Africa at this stage of the game. It is Blanc de Blanc. It's all Chardonnay. It's got Jeff Greer stamped all over it. I mean, it just tastes absolutely, it's very dry. If I didn't know better, I would say that it's ultra brut almost. It's very dry, but it is very delicious.
It is officially ultra brut, but we don't even call it ultra brut, but it is. But, you know, the maturity basically ensures that you don't need much dosage to balance it. It's beautifully balanced almost on its own. But, you know, once you open that first bottle, you're going to your interest in drinking the next bottle is going to be so great that you actually won't even bother about damaging the packaging anymore.
We'll keep one bottle intact so that when we're very old, we can look at it and remember how exquisite it was. We'll drink the rest. So it's released now into the great wide world. Are you exporting it anywhere, or is it all for us here at home?
Kerry, this is going to be mostly for local business and local sales. And it's
how much did you bottle?
You know, we only do one amphora a year, which is 1,000 liters. And with a bit of loss and so on, you know, you don't get much more than 1,000 bottles from it. And so that's it. That's what we do each year. Okay. And so it's very, very scarce, and you know, you can hardly consider exporting it.
Have you bottled it? Have you made subsequent vintages of Pithos that are, in your estimation, good enough? Is it going to be sort of like champagne used to be, that they only really declared a vintage if they felt it was good enough? I think that's long since ceased to exist, but I think they make a vintage every year now.
Yeah. Look, we have more reliable weather here, but we've made a batch each year since 2016, similar quantities, but we'll only release it if once it's finished the second fermentation and maturation, we determine that it tastes good enough to be put under the Pithos label. Yeah.
Yeah. No,
so that's
it's extraordinary.
Plan.
It's nothing less than we would have expected from Valera, really, because over the years that I've been associated with Valera, you have made, if we go through them, I think you were one of the first Brut Naturals in the country, weren't you?
Yes.
I'm trying to think of all the different Valeras that we've had. We had a Munro, but you're a Munro, aren't you? That's your name.
No, so we've prided ourselves at being, you know, pioneering and innovative in the category. I mean, I spent a lot of time in France and Champagne in the 80s and 90s. But, you know, every sort of 3 or 4 years we thought, you know, we've got to add to our range. So, you know, in 1984, we were the first to do a sort of a joint venture with a champagne producer. And then in 87, we did the first bottle fermented rosé. In those days, it wasn't called Cup Classique, but Metro Traditionnel. And then in 93, we basically did the first prestige cuvée, which was Munro Brut. And then in 97, we produced what you mentioned, the Brut Natural, which is
natural.
A Blanc de Blanc, but also with zero dosage, so bone dry, but also without sulfites. And, you know, a zero dosage, there are a few of them on the market now, but There's only one other zero added sulfur bubbly on the market. And then in 2013, we launched the first light cup Classique.
That's right.
Which is quite an interesting growth category for us because, you know, there is a bit of a trend towards a lighter, lower alcohol.
But I mean, how much lighter can you get, really? Because that's why we love bubbles, because it's generally low in alcohol and low in sugar as well. What's making it even lighter?
Well, that's a good question. And so what happens is that bubbly is at 12. So yeah. If you remove a little bit of alcohol, you can sell it at 9.5 without sacrificing much flavor. So we take a base wine that we make from slightly earlier picked grapes, and we remove alcohol from that base wine to about 8.5, because a second fermentation adds another 1.2 volume percent onto the alcohol level. So we come out at about 9.7, somewhere around there. But anything under 10 in South Africa is considered light.
Light.
Light, okay. Light in kilojoules and light in alcohol. But, you know, our aim was to go the sort of light and alcohol route.
We can. I think it's brilliant. I think we can definitely use that if we're on diet. But also it's a nice drink to introduce to kids when your kids start drinking when they're teenagers. You know, you don't want to give them stuff that's like 15 and 16% ABV. It's hectic. So, and it's pretty. And as you say, it's not making too much of a difference to the texture and the flavors in your mouth. I don't know how you do it. You just got that. I can smell your cellar a million miles away as I open a bottle of Valera. It's just so distinctive, so fresh. It's so vibrant and so bright. And yet, when we were drinking the other day, when we were all together, I think you opened a bottle of Munro, a much older vintage of the Munro. It was almost like drinking Bollinger, really. It's just aging. It's getting that beautiful old golden sort of hue, you know. And it tastes like you could almost eat that stuff for breakfast. You know, you don't drink that anymore. You eat it. It's gorgeous.
Yes. No, I mean, look, quality Cup Classique is perfected by time, as we say in the Cup Classique Association. And a good bubbly has to be able to improve with age.
Yeah.
So it's very important.
The
Munro Brut has a little bit of barrel fermentation of part of the base wine.
So it tastes like Pythos, Bollinger. I didn't even know that, but I could taste it. It tasted gorgeous. Jeff, you and your cousin started that farm in 1980-something already. Did you know then that you wanted really... Has bubbles always been your first love, or did it become your first love?
No, bubbles became my first love. You know, pre-1983, I'd done a couple of vintages overseas, but my main experience was at Dalheim. And, you know, I didn't have much bubbly experience at the time, but Dalheim had made a Chamat method bubbly. And,
I didn't even know that. Oh, Spotsy, I didn't know that.
At that time we were doing that, tank fermented bubbly. And then when we started here at Valera, I was sort of wondering what we could focus on to basically put Valera into the limelight. We were sort of trying to work out what category to go for. And a French champagne producer walked in here and basically started chatting. And we sat down together and shared a couple of bottles of wine. And on the day we met him, we decided to exchange a royalty for technical know-how, which only the Champenois have, because, you know, it gets passed down from father to son. And it was a 15-year royalty agreement, which was probably the best thing we ever did.
It's amazing, really. And And also, you were young then. I mean, I remember when I first met you, you were like this hot little hottie in the cellar. We were all young. And it's a big decision to make when you've just started out on a property like that. It's a long-term capital outlay. You know, it's a long-term investment, Bubbles. You can't just bottle it and wham, absolutely, bam, thank you, ma'am, sell it the next vintage. You know, it's hard. So from an economical, did you tell your father that he had to fund you for the next 10 years, or how did you make it work?
No, he said that he'll help buy the farm, but there's no funding. So we had to make it work with what we earned. And we did, you know, we started small. I mean, our first bottling of bubbly was 10,000 bottles. And, you know, in the first 10 years, it grew slowly. And after 10 years, we were up to about 50,000 bottles, you know, all hand-riddled and so on. And then we had the cash flow to go bigger. So we put in bigger equipment and expanded the cellar space. And then we took the risk of going into the hundreds of thousands, you know. And it was a great decision, because, you know, today Cab Classique is an important South African category, and there's still a bit of growth in it, you know, which is wonderful.
Well, it's thanks to people like yourself and Kathy and your cousin Simon and obviously Anne and Pete Ferreira and many others. Not many others. There's a handful of extremely good bubbly makers in South Africa, and you really have established MCC as a wonderful category for us. And I love bubbles. I love champagne, but I do love MCC as well. There are very few other countries in the world that make a champagne equivalent the standard of ours, I think. There's any amount of other ones that we can look at, and it's become quite sexy to drink Prosecco, or, you know, as I said, you said some of that Chamat stuff. Are you there? You looked like you disappeared for a minute. But we do. We've got a really, really high quality and a standard, and it's due largely to people like yourself. Now, you've got a son who's gone into the business as well. What's he going to do? Alexander, isn't he yours?
No, he's my cousin's son.
Oh, is that Simon's son?
It's actually Simon's brother's son.
So goodness, there's thousands of Greers.
He did work here, and he was developing his own brand called Standalone and a couple of other brands. So he's actually on his own now.
And your children did numbers, didn't they? Didn't your kids do accounting?
They did.
That's right. Yes. I remember now. Sensible. Sensible.
And
you're all going to clear off, because you sold your European property, sold your French property and business as well. What are you going to do? Are you going to tell us what you're going to do? Is it a secret?
No, look, this wine industry has been one hell of a ride, and I've loved it. I've become extremely passionate about wine. It's not only my business, but it's my hobby, and
that's what happens.
I'll stay involved. Look, I'm leaving here when I'm at a ripe old age of about 70, so I'll stay involved in the generic categories, you know, the associations and so on. And who knows? I haven't determined if I'm going to do anything else in the wine business,
but I'll be
in Stellenbosch and Stanford.
You stay forever young, Jeff Greer. I'm sitting here looking at you, and you're reminding me of Gary Player. Are you playing more golf, or what's happening? That I'm looking at you. You look 20 years younger than you did. Like him, forever useful. Are you playing lots of golf, or what are you doing?
Listen, I respect.
Just tell some secrets. You're not giving away anything.
I respect the comparison to Gary Player, but I don't think I'm going to be anything like him. Look, I play golf. I love it, and I will be playing golf in my later years. But okay. I'm actually. one of those guys that has a loft problem, lack of something talent. So I'm not talented enough to make a living out of golf.
You don't need to make a living. You've sold your property, your business for so much money, Jeff Greer. You don't ever have to earn any money again in your life, I'm sure. I'm sure we don't, if we're all dead honest.
Well, look, you know, one of the nice things about having a successful Cup Classique business is that it brought GCF to us, because that's what they were looking for, a bubbly business.
I know, it's lovely, and it is a lovely business to have, because, you know, bubbly is also a happy drink. It's an incredibly happy drink. We've spent our whole lives telling people that you don't only have to drink bubbly when you're happy. You must drink it when you're sad. I think it was Madame Bollinger or the widow Clico or some one of the girls said when she does and doesn't drink it, and she basically drank it all day, every day, which is exactly what we should all be doing. But yeah, it is a happy drink. And so it's a happy environment to work in. I think that's why you and Kathy both look like you're still sort of 20 when you're not. You could have come and spent 30 years like me working in the shop, and then you could have looked like me. You've had a charmed life.
What I do love about bubbly is that it's always associated with everyone's best moments in their lives, you know. And so you always think, you know, you're making a product that people are drinking at their weddings, at their birthdays, at New Year.
So it's happy.
Big family get-togethers. It's a happy drink. Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah, it is.
And
Jeff, this Valera, I suppose we should have Karen around here now to tell us how much. I don't know how much this Pithos is, but whatever it is, it's not. It's not enough.
The shelf price will be about, the shelf price will be about 1,200,
It's worth every cent. And I think that everybody, and it's obviously available at selected outlets, hey, around the country. I'm sure it's not a supermarket product or anything like that. Yeah.
No,
it's available,
no,
guys. It's available like right here and right now. It's beautiful. We'll get somebody to put a big picture of Pithos next year. I don't know, Cal, you're going to have to superimpose a picture of this bottle next to Jeff or me or something, will you? These poor children, they get tasked with the most ridiculous things because of my inability to get any of this tech stuff right. But we'll make a plan. We'll get it there. Everyone will see it. It's gorgeous. Thank you, Jeff. I want to talk to you all day, but I can't, and neither can you.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you again. Thanks, you're going travelling now. Are you going on holiday or what?
I am actually going on a bit of holiday.
And, I finally got you to admit
I shouldn't divulge to your audience where I'm going.
No, you don't have to. But at least you sort of divulge.
But I am playing some golf. Playing some golf on my holiday, yeah.
Well, when you get back, we're going to make a phone call and we're going to make a plan, because I think that all of us need to start partying a bit more in the wine industry, and we'll leave all the younger people to work as hard as we did 20, 30, 40 years ago. I think that's a good idea.
Quite right, Kerry. Of course, we only have a certain limited time remaining, so DR is something we have to respect.
You know, they said when we all first started our businesses, I said, you've got to do 10,000 hours of like seriously hard graft. I can't remember which motivational speaker that was, but when we were young, it was 10,000 hours you had to do before your business was going to be successful. And then there somehow became another 10,000 hours and another 10,000 hours. I don't think we've got 10,000 hours of partying left. What do you think? I don't think we've got that much. I think 10,000 hours is 5 years. Oh, Callum's telling me, how? 1.2?
Roughly.
Oh, no, then we've got time to party.
We've got, if you think we party, we party at least 3 days a week, so.
Have a gorgeous holiday. Thank you so much
you
for talking. And thank you for the invitation
Absolute
to
pleasure.
The gorgeous lunch. It was really a privilege and a treat. Thank you, Jeff. We'll be
Kerry.
In touch soon. Cheers. Bye.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.